Welcome back to another episode of The Right Angle. Today, we are getting into rural economic development. Not too much of a tangent from last episode when we were talking about hemp. Today, we are talking a little bit more broadly about what the lay of the land looks like in rural Wisconsin. What are our housing issues? What are our workforce needs? Where are our businesses going? Are we stuck in the 70s and doing light manufacturing, or are we moving forward? And I think the answers may again surprise you. There's a lot of vitality out in rural Wisconsin. Today, we are featuring a conversation between Representative Romaine Quinn and Dave Armstrong. Representative Quinn helped start the Assembly's Rural Wisconsin Initiative, which has set the agenda on rural policy here in Madison. Dave Armstrong is the executive director of the Barron County Economic Development Corporation, and he has a wealth of experience and information. This is a podcast that could have gone 5 hours, but we had to keep it down to that half-hour mark for you. So here is rural Wisconsin and the view from the economy there.
Today we have Dave Armstrong, Barron County Economic Development Director, on the phone with us. Dave, welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, could you just briefly describe, as the Director of Barron County Economic Development, what you view your role as and your position?
Sure. I've kind of got three basic buckets that I work in. First is what we call business services. Barron County is heavily invested in startups, so a big focus of our time is helping individuals start businesses or buy businesses. The second piece of that also would be we've got a lot of existing businesses here, startups that are, you know, out of startup, kind of struggling for what do we do next. So we've worked with the State Business Intelligence Program, brought them in, and then we help existing businesses grow. The third piece, which honestly 5 years ago we did very little with, was the workforce piece. And that's become more and more of an issue as the years go by. So under the business services, that'd be my three primary areas there. Community development is second. With the community development, it's all about workforce housing, making the communities more vibrant, the broadband connectivity issue. With the third bucket, I guess, if you will, is tourism. Tourism definitely is economic development, but it goes along with, you know, the vibrant communities, getting people to come here, wanting to come here, et cetera. So that's kind of a real high view of my three main areas.
Sure, and that's perfect, because those are kind of the thousand-foot view issues we kind of want to just touch on briefly today. And you mentioned workforce and entrepreneurship and helping new businesses. You know, there tends to be a perception that in rural areas, you know, it's just simple manufacturing and any businesses we have are from old industries that, you know, eventually die off anyways. And it's just inevitable that you're not going to have much economic development in rural areas. And obviously, you know, that is not true. You know, we have a lot of high-tech industries and even industries that have international connections. Could you speak to some of that perception that maybe, you know, rural area is just, it's simple manufacturing that will go by the wayside at some point, but the reality on the ground is much different. And do you see that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you look at, I guess, what people classify as old manufacturing, I don't know that it exists all that much anymore. Most of the manufacturing now is, you know, high-tech manufacturing where the factory floors today look nothing like they did back even in the 70s or the 80s. Everything today is all cutting-edge high-tech manufacturing. So from the standpoint of those communities that are blessed with an abundance of manufacturing, which Barron County has a very good, it's one of my largest sectors here, that is the driver along with, you know, ag to a less degree of our region. As far as startups go, my startups, we started a startup program about 5 years ago in partnership with a local small business development center. It's to the point where we can't keep up with it now, which is good. But we see a gambit of manufacturing companies starting to service companies starting, your normal, you know, food establishments, coffee houses, that type of thing. Those are always there, but predominantly what you've got is the, again, how do you support this workforce or support the 21st century here? And that's what your startups are basically revolving around.
So that goes hand in hand with the workforce issue in general. You know, obviously rural areas are aging fast, and we do not have enough people coming back to replace those that are retiring out. And obviously that's a big issue for businesses that currently exist and any future businesses. Do you see, as you know, part of your job, you mentioned dealing with workforce, which is something that's fairly new, but a brain drain issue, you know, getting kids that not only grow up in rural areas to stay, but getting them to possibly come back later? And what kind of message do we send today? And could we do a better job at preventing some of that brain drain?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, you know, that's one thing we spent a lot of time on. In fact, I work real closely with all the school districts on it. Is if you look at the school districts, you know, they vary wildly. But if you look at, let's take Rice Lake School District, for example, excellent programs revolved around the kids that are going off to four-year colleges. Excellent programs. You know, they got all the AP programs in place, et cetera, et cetera. The one thing working with them that we've determined is very little is done for the kids that are staying here. All right. So in other words, my future workforce immediately, virtually nothing's being done for them. So we're creating a pilot program now to address those. But the same is, if you look, I guess overall at statistics, I'm losing about 50% of my graduating seniors each year to four-year colleges. That means they're going elsewhere for college, all right? That's a huge brain drain. So now the question which you pose is, how do we get them back? Now, that's one thing we're working with the local high schools on, UWECBC, Barron County here, and WITC, of all right, looking at those graduates and reaching out to them, because what you grew up here, you want to start a family, we'd love to have you back here because we've got the careers and the cost of living that makes it real advantageous to come back. So again, we're in the process of putting together programs to do exactly that. But now you look at the services that are out there. All right, now I'm competing with the Twin Cities because of my proximity, and the Eau Claire area, for example. What services do they have that I don't have? All right, your broadband is up there. Unless I get them in a Rice Lake, Barron, Chetek type of thing, broadband is real spotty once I get out in the country. Where do a lot of people want to come back to? They want to come back to live a little bit out in the country. So I've got some challenges there. So when you look at what we're trying to do, even with the placemaking piece, you know, an example is we started a placemaking exercise in Rice Lake. Worked fabulously. City Council decided we're going to do a splash pad. Put a splash pad in place. I had called my daughter in the Twin Cities, said, we got a splash pad. And she said, great, I've got three of them within 15 minutes of me.
Sure.
But that's the kind of thing that, you know, to a great degree, rural is competing with. So that's, how do we make small towns cool, you know, for example, to bring the kids back here? And that's going to be one of our challenges, but I think we're up to it.
Absolutely. And I know you touched briefly on the broadband piece, and the state's been trying to focus on that over the last 4 years and making that investment. And of course, that discussion is going on this budget too. And I think more people are realizing just how important it is, not only for economic development and connecting our business parks or making sure our schools are connected, but even that attraction and retention piece. You know, how do you attract someone back, a graduate that's been getting a taste of living in the cities or other metropolitan areas, and have them come back when they don't even have internet access to their home? So I could definitely see that as a piece of the workforce as well.
Well, it's huge, and I've had firsthand experience with that, where we've had people come in, look at places, and they finally told the realtor, all right, don't show me anything else that doesn't have broadband, because I'm not interested in looking at it.
Right, especially this generation too, on forgetting how slow the dial-up used to be, and there's no patience for that anymore. So having
Correct.
That connectivity is so important. You mentioned, you know, we talk about brain drain, attracting and retaining people, bringing them back to our areas, keeping who we have. You know, obviously these people not only just broadband issues, but need a place to live. And I know we've talked briefly in the past about housing and workforce housing? What kind of housing is available, and what will attract people back here? The one of the rural committees in the state assembly are going to be having a public hearing shortly on workforce housing as well. What do you see as challenges, opportunities in rural areas in terms of housing, and how that affects business opportunities as well?
Sure. Yeah, you brought it up earlier. Where all the demographics are aging. Okay. Exact same thing with the housing. You know, all of our housing stocks are aging rapidly. People are, because healthcare is better, people are living longer. You've got people aging in place longer, not necessarily being able to keep the homes up to, you know, the standards they did at one time. My parents are example. They live in Turtle Lake. Both can't manage a house that big, so we're over there, you know, fixing things constantly. That's something that goes on throughout rural Wisconsin. But is there a program in place for rehabilitation of these old homes? How about the individuals that want to get out, like my mom and dad would like to get out of their single family home, but go where exactly? There's a waiting list in the senior housing. So I can see a need for senior apartments, because these are folks that are in good enough shape where they don't need the skilled nursing at all, but we don't have senior apartments. We don't have that available. You know, we're about halfway through our housing study right now in Barron County, and what's quickly coming into line is I can use at least four senior housing, probably five apartment buildings throughout the county. By doing that, you're going to free up a ton of single-family homes that need updating, et cetera, but that becomes a bigger issue, because if you look at new versus the existing homes, you know, talking to builders, they can't build new single-family homes. You're just standard two-bed, two-bath, three-bed, two-bath type of thing for less than $200,000, $220,000. Now look at, is that really workforce housing? No, that's what we're finding here, is the sweet spot for workforce housing is typically your $90,000 to about $150,000, $160,000 house, all right? So we've already got a gap that exists between the new homes that can be built and what people can afford if you're looking at pure workforce housing. So that's, again, some of the challenges that we're looking at is senior housing, affordable workforce housing. New doesn't really fill the bill at that point, so we've got some challenges.
So is that where the state should focus? You know, we look at how do we build new homes, and obviously the cost of that is so high because we know contractors are so busy. The building industry is just booming right now. Is it a better focus to find developers in the state to invest in senior homes to try to snowball that effect of getting seniors out of their homes and opening up those opportunities for younger families, workforce families, and slowly renovating those? Or do you look at new development for and try to get in that money ballpark range of that $150,000, you know, where maybe mom and dad are both working full time and can afford a payment like that?
You know, I think if we get creative, we can probably do both, but you're going to have to somehow buy down the land costs of that $200,000, $220,000 house, because that's a big piece of it. Rice Lake, for example, your average lot's about $30,000. Well, take that $30,000 off your $220,000 house, your $200,000 house, you're getting pretty close to the affordability factor. So, I mean, if we can get creative, you know, we've talked about this in the past, the use of TIDs, for example. You can, you know, extend a TID you're closing a year, take that money, use it for housing. Maybe that's a buying down of housing costs, you know, the land costs for a developer. One thing we had talked about, but I don't think it's really been addressed yet, is, you know, a TID. I mean, I think it's got a maximum right now. You can use 15% or 20% of unplatted land is all you can use a TID for at this point. Let's see if we can do something different there to allow more ingenuity, I guess, with using TID monies for housing developments. And it doesn't have to be free land. You know, we've kicked around the idea here, and we have one community working on it now where, they've got a subdivision. Instead of charging somebody up front for the lot price, give it to them free, get them billed, hold a note on the land where the first time that the homeowner sells it, now the city becomes, you know, they pay the cost of the land.
Ah, sure.
So there's all kinds of ways we can do this, but it's just, let's think out of the box a little bit to buy down the cost of that new. Now, I agree 100%. We've got to figure out a way to rehabilitate the older homes quicker. We created that program here with Habitat for Humanity. We worked with Department of Administration. That's just starting. We finally got it going where they're going to fund Habitat to acquire, rehab, and sell homes. And that's going to be in your sweet spot. And it has to be to individuals that are, you know, LMI, low and moderate income, which is your workforce housing. So we've got some things going, but yeah, that could be accelerated or, you know, brought statewide.
You mentioned the housing study. Obviously, people have perceptions on what they think their communities need in terms of housing or what's available. And some people are more experts at that than others. Do you recommend a housing study for every community that's looking at this? This was a county-based one. Do you see that as advantageous, especially for planning purposes? Were there any surprises? Obviously, you mentioned you're only halfway done, but are there any early results, anything that has surprised you at all? And do you see as this may be a first step for every county as they look to really try to target the housing issue and knowing exactly what you have first before you start jumping into some of these projects of, you know, incentivizing development or things like that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that it did initially when we first started looking at the housing study is we had some information based on the one developer coming in and building townhomes that there was a pent-up need because as soon as he would put a shovel in the ground, they were sold, all right? And that was all people predominantly wanting out of their single-family homes into that townhome, so an older demographic. But that freed up all the single-family homes. So we had some idea there. We're finding more concrete data coming out of the study. The one thing that we again thought was there was the gap of what workforce can afford versus what is being built. Now we've got hard data showing that. So yeah, there was a lot of, you know, speculation. Well, we need this type of housing. Well, do we really, you know? And once we went out, the first thing we did was we went out with an employee survey. So we went to the workforce to find out from them what do they want for homes, what are they expecting to pay versus what is out there. That data's been fascinating because it tells you exactly from the workforce side what they want.
That's interesting. Now, I've read articles recently about just the perception of home ownership and what people are looking for in homes. And obviously, over time, our perception and want in a home has changed and grown. You know, you look at the average square footage of homes in some of your older neighborhoods and communities, they're much smaller than what's being built today. Now, do the economics tamper back some of our desires to have homes we can't afford in some of that study? Do you see that? I mean, are as you ask workers and their desire for their homes, do those reach past their income levels or are those in line? And do our expectations on what we want in a home, you know, those have changed over time. Does that play an effect of what's available, what's affordable, and what's in people's minds on what they view as a housing potential?
I think it does, and some of the data that we're seeing shows that as well. Is a lot of times you're expecting you're going to move into this home and just live. Well, it depends on what you're buying, all right? I've got an older, smaller home. It's almost paid for. I don't plan to buy a brand new home that I have to, you know, go in for 30 years or 15 years on. But again, I'm expecting to do work in mine. That's one thing we're finding is the younger buyer now basically wants to move into their house and just live. That's not what's going to happen in a lot of the single family, older single family homes that haven't been kept up. Is the best way to describe it. Nor do I find, I mean, we're finding some information too where they don't want to do the upkeep or the renovation on it because they don't have the skills. Well, now it comes back to how do we put a renovation program in place that'll do that for them? And there's a couple tools out there that are working. We just got one where they'll wrap in the cost of the home and renovation into one package. Well, great. All right. That needs to be brought out more because it's the best kept secret to a certain degree. But, you know, I don't want to drone on, but yeah, so we're finding the wants, not necessarily meeting with the needs.
Sure. What do you see? We've talked about workforce. We've talked about the housing piece of workforce. We've talked about issues of broadband for attraction and retention. And workforce is a huge piece of economic development. But what do you see as is another big challenge for trying to grow the economies in rural areas across the state?
Honestly, my biggest single challenge right now is my workforce.
It is.
You know, if you look across Barron County right now, I've got probably 600 open jobs. My unemployment rate, seasonally, it bops up this time of year to about 5%. But if you look at an adjusted, which I just got from workforce, workforce resource, is about 3% unemployment, which is perfect unemployment. I've been down to 2.6%. So I've got 600 open jobs, and by the numbers given to me by DWD, I've got 600 people, quote unquote, unemployed. I've got perfect employment. All right. So the jobs are there. I don't have the people to fill them. Well, how do I get them to fill them? You know, we're looking outside to try to get people to move from the Twin Cities to rural Wisconsin. Where would you rather live? You know, east side of the St. Paul type of thing, or one of my little towns here? I'll take the small towns. I lived in the east side of St. Paul. But where do they live? That's all part of this equation. I've got businesses I've talked to that used to grow at 10, 12, 14% annually. Now they're growing at 5% or 4% annually because they can't put out the merchandise, put out the product because of the lack of workforce. So yeah, I see a tampering on the whole economy because they can't produce. And, you know, there's a thing, too, we got to look at is, you know, some of those manufacturers that, you know, people will downplay at times, they typically will manufacture goods here and sell elsewhere. That's what we want. They're bringing money in from elsewhere into my community. They're not just circulating money within the community. That's wealth generation if I can bring outside money in. So the more Absolutely. I can help them grow, the better off we are.
Recently, we've heard discussions of the WEDC, and I know some communities have had mixed results with that. You know, you mentioned, at least in Barron County, you've got 500 to 600 jobs openings, and some of that is due to initial growth, some of it's due to new entrepreneurial businesses. What has your experience been working with the WEDC in either expanding existing businesses or using their tools to try and attract new opportunities to Barron County?
Tremendous. I mean, in the last 5 years, we've worked successfully with them. We've got about $5 million worth of investment into cities or businesses in Barron County. I've talked to other of my counterparts around here that might complain about it as far as, well, they haven't helped me. And my question always goes back to them, how many times have you applied? How many times have you asked? And if I hear nothing, then it's like, you got to ask if you're going to get anything. All right. We worked real hard with WDC with Saputo. All right. Saputo is a cheese manufacturer. Through help from WDC, we got a small rural enterprise zone designation for Saputo. That freed up approximately $3 million to them for expansion. Now, that's for a $110 million expansion. I'll give $3 million for $110 million worth of hard physical expansion every day.
All day long, okay. Absolutely.
Yep. And the one problem they had, which is, I mean, exactly our point, is in there they had to create 150 jobs. That was my one point when they first came in. I thought, I don't know where in the world they're going to find 150 workers. So they actually had to go back to WDC to renegotiate because they could only find about 90.
Really?
So, yeah. So, again, there's where my workforce is kind of constraining my growth.
And just briefly to wrap up, too, when we talk about these jobs and growth and expansion, some of the comments we can hear are just briefly about what are the actual wages. Has Barron County done a wage study? Do you know what people are making? And have wages been rising in rural areas as fast as other areas? What do you see in Barron County as opportunities for the actual workers themselves?
Yep, we actually did a wage study in 2018, so it's at end of 2017, so it's almost about a year and a half old now. Wages are raising tremendously because of the shortage. Right now, even between that and this, we've already had employers coming back asking if we can do another because the starting wages again have gone up so high. Because of the lack of the workforce. A manufacturing position nowadays, you'd be hard-pressed to walk into one for at least $15, maybe $16 an hour and a benefit package I wish I had.
Sure. Okay?
So that's basically what you're looking at out there. Sure, there's some that are paying you $12, $13. Their turnover is horrendous because they're not paying a wage.
You got to compete.
Exactly. So, you know, again, with my workforce housing, what we're kind of looking at is that $15, $16 an hour worker times two, you know, with a spouse probably, and that's what we're guiding, using as our guide for, do we have housing that'll accommodate them? And the answer is no, and new housing isn't going to do it. All right, it's going to have to be the reworked housing. Or even when you look at apartment buildings, you know, Swiderski's done a great job of putting up new apartment buildings here. Their average rent is $800 to $900 a month for a two-bedroom, maybe $750 in some cases. All right, looking at our studies, sweet spot, $600 to $650 is what the individuals, the workforce wants to pay. So we've even got a gap in new apartments versus, you know, rehabilitated apartments, if you will, or less expensive apartments.
Sure. So, Dave. You're a wealth of information, and we appreciate your perspective. And it sounds like Barron County is at least a representative of what rural areas can achieve and should be achieving. We'd love to have you back on again, but we're short on time. And again, thanks for joining us, and we'll be discussing rural economics further ahead in the future as well. Thank you again for joining.
Look forward to it, and thanks for the opportunity.
So there is rural economic development. Sometimes you get the stereotype of kind of backwards looking or not quite keeping up with the rest of the state, but we see real vitality in the rural parts of our state, talking about building small businesses, taking them up to the next stage. And increasingly now we've done that, and we're in a place where we need to make sure that we're bringing workforce in and we've got enough people to grow the jobs that we have. Our economic policies over the last 8 years under Governor Walker have put us in a strong spot with low taxes. We encourage people to come in and take advantage of those things. And we've got some good state partners in WEDC and other programs that we've used to be able to leverage those natural strengths that rural Wisconsin has to build out and keep developing on our natural assets here in Wisconsin. Thanks to our intern, as always, for the music, Andrew Storrs. If you've liked what you've heard, please subscribe. We are available on iTunes, Google Play, Radio Public, Breaker, Overcast, and Pocket Casts, and more to come every week. If you have an idea for a guest or a topic, we'd love to hear from you. Please tweet us at Wisconsin Assembly GOP. This has been The Right Angle. We'll talk to you next time.